Welcome to the Michelle Mission, two men, one podcast, every black film ever made. My name is Len, a.k.a. The Bat Tribble, and as always, I'm joined by my partner.
Hey, this is Vincent Williams.
Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we are taking a trip to 1986 for Vincent's selection on the Michelle Mission, Billy Crystal and the late Gregory Hines, starring in the action comedy Running Scared. That is the movie we will be reviewing tonight here on the Michelle Mission, streaming live and correctly, hopefully this time around, from Yunk Junk, Philadelphia's premier video podcast palace here in Manayunk, to all points north, south, east, and west. That includes Facebook, Twitter, and to YouTube, where all of our friends and missionaries are out there sitting in the chat. Hello, missionaries.
Good evening, one and all.
So we're starting a little late, thank you for all of you who stuck with us through our technical difficulties.
We'll play a little catch up.
Because of that, we're just going to jump right into the show, which means that we are going to be getting to emails, or as we like to call them,
missives from the missionary.
So what else is going on, Lynn?
We have emails, Vincent.
Ooh, missives from the missionaries.
This is from the missionaries, ladies and gentlemen. We've got a pair of Michaels tonight, Vincent.
Okay.
This is Michael Sykes.
Hey, what's up, Michael?
Subject line, the scribbled overpass. Oops, I mean graffiti bridge. Hello, Len and Vincent. A couple of days ago, I listened to y'all podcast episode on the scribbled overpass, a.k.a. graffiti bridge. Mm-hmm. After listening to it, I watched the movie again last time I saw it, I was 11 and I liked it. Mm. But watching this again, all I can say is that this non-achievement film lacks any characteristic that Purple Rain or Under the Cherry Moon had. Mm. Prince was too comfortable with himself and it showed. What the hell was George Clinton doing in this movie? This movie was a wake-up call for Prince, the one that he needed. If you dig deeper into the artists whom Prince signed on his Paisley Park record label, none of them, except for Sheila E., had hits. They never had any big hit solo hits without Prince or hits at all. And he includes Carmen Electra, Jill Jones, Mavis Staples, George Clinton, Ingrid Chavez, and Robin Powers. When they were signed to Paisley Park, they did not have a hit, and he was controlling them like puppets and toying with them. He would let them record, write, or produce for them, but a lot of times, the music was never released. In a way, I'm glad he fell flat on his face in this movie for surrounding himself with yes men. Silver lining of this is that the next year he came back strong with a masterpiece album, perhaps his magnum opus of the 90s, Diamonds and Pearls. Mm. I know I'm going to get heat for what I said, but hey, it had to be said. I will forever love his music and miss him. Love your fan, Michael Sykes.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, there's not a lot from that period that I kind of revisit. I know I mentioned
now, this. Are you talking about like the Prince music from
that period where he, you know, was like Michael said, either those artists were signed to Prince or Prince was working with them extensively. I know I've mentioned this before, since good friend Tanya Pendleton has been kind of part of the missionary family, and I follow her on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And she's a huge Prince person.
Yeah, I do not know a bigger Prince fan.
And because the algorithm, once you follow Tanya, you know, I've been exposed to all of this Prince social media that I wasn't before. And it's fascinating when you run into that vein of Prince fan who enjoys Graffiti Bridge and enjoys that period, because you can find a Prince fan that enjoys any period of
Prince. That's very true.
So it is interesting listening to the arguments for that period. I know.
I'm curious what the argument would be that's pro that period.
You know, it's of its time. Look, I'm not even going to pretend that I can even paraphrase the argument, but there are arguments for it.
Of course.
I will say, I feel like this is that moment, depending on how far the age, I mean, the year range you use, where he has that Chaka Khan album.
I think that's
Coming to My House is the name of that album. And every 6-7 years, I re-listen to that album and I go, oh, that's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just sort of, you know, you're just listening to stuff all the time. But besides that album, I know he did a couple of songs on, like, I think Tevin Campbell's album.
Yes. Either the second or third album.
Right.
He did a couple of songs.
And they're not bad.
No, this is the second. You're right.
Although there is, I do remember there was one song that it's like, it's real sexy.
But it's
like Tevin Campbell's
sexy.
So it's weird.
It's weird. Yeah.
It's like 14-year-old Tevin Campbell and he talking real sexy.
Yeah.
About like honey and oils or something. It's like.
Yeah. Like you really.
Yeah. All right.
Don't really compute. Yeah.
Besides the Chaka Khan album and Tevin Campbell talking real sexy, I don't really remember much from that period.
Chaka Khan, it's funny you bring up Chaka Khan because that is an artist who I think is like the artist. Everyone got mad love and respect for Chaka Khan. You can't help because she can blow.
Oh, yeah.
And if you've ever seen her in concert, she does a great show. I've only seen her once, but I remember it being very memorable. But she is someone who does not have a large body of work that you can go to and say, oh, my God, I love all this Chaka Khan.
I mean, unless you include Rufus.
Okay, yes, so you include Rufus, but even still, like, there's not like, even with that, I don't think are there like 20 great Chaka Khan and Rufus hits?
I think you could put together a playlist. I do, actually.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. All right.
Like I said, you gotta fold Rufus in there.
Okay.
But, you know, the Chaka Khan albums.
See, there's maybe two.
Yeah, maybe two. Maybe this is something I can actually, because I have that on my phone.
You got the Chaka Khans?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. You know, I do Chaka Khan.
See, I do select Chaka Khan. Chaka Khan.
Chaka Khan.
She basically is Candyman. You have to say her name three times.
Yes. But let me see this. Like, I think Chaka, her first album, is a great album.
Okay, yeah. And
you know, for...
Now, is that the one with the cartoon face?
No, the cartoon face is I Feel For You. I'm ambivalent about I Feel For You. So, like, Chaka is 78. That has I'm Every Woman, Love Has Fallen On Me, which is the remake of the Rotary Connection song. Roll Me Through the Rush, Life Is a Dance. We got to love, like, that's.
Yeah, but are all those like big hits though?
I mean, you know, how do we define big hits?
Okay, but there are nice Chaka Khan songs.
Naughty has Clouds and Move Me No Mountain, and Papillion.
Okay, see, you need to go to Rufus to like pull an iconic Chaka Khan playlist. You're already jumping into Rufus, and you're only on her second album.
Right, third album has, because you know the thing about Chaka Khan, a lot of her stuff was remixed, and then they were club hits. Like Life Is a Dance is the remix album that comes out in '89, which quite honestly was my real introduction to Chaka Khan.
Okay,
like the remixes, and then I went back to the original ones. But right, I Feel For You is 84, and that's got I Feel For You and Through the Fire. Like those, we're moving to the 80s, and we're arguably getting a little slick, overproduced. Some might say cheesy, but
it's not, and it's not the Chaka that you really want,
right? But like I ride for Chaka.
You could run. No, you could ride for Shaka, but I'm
and
just,
I ride for.
What's your favorite Shaka Khan song?
Probably Clouds. Different Shapes and Sizes.
Yes.
But to your point, I agree with you. Like, I feel like Shaka Khan is a little kind of inside baseball-y.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do kind of wonder, and then we don't really have.
You know who Shaka Khan is?
Who?
Shaka Khan is maybe our generation's Ledisi.
Yeah, that kind of matches what I was about to say. And I said, let me just pull back because we just don't have time to go down this rabbit hole. But you know what happens? I feel like to a certain extent, Shaka Khan got caught out like Phyllis Hyman and so many of these black women singers in the early to mid 80s.
Whitney Houston.
Hurricane Whitney Houston.
Yeah.
Hurricane Whitney Houston.
Hurricane Whitney Houston, which was quickly followed by Tornado Toni Braxton.
Well, even that.
Or Mariah Carey.
Or Mariah Carey. Well, I just think there was that moment. Because even them, they were kind of in the wake of Whitney Houston, that kind of slick.
Yeah, but they found a lane. They found a way to like Mariah Carey found a lane.
She was basically, the way she was marketed, she was a leaner, meaner, whiter Whitney Houston.
But Toni Braxton found her lane.
Yeah, but, you know, it's like that kind of sophisticated, grown up. And then, you know, on the other end, you had Mary J. Blige.
Mary J. Blige.
Who kind of was younger, hipper.
Uh-huh. And you had Janet.
And then Janet, right. So, yeah, that's interesting. Once you take Rufus out of the equation, how much do you really shock
are you feeling? All right.
But thank you, Michael. Hey, Michael, that's a letter that has to come when we start on time.
Right.
We'll sit here and talk about this for an hour.
We got one more email. This is from Michael Lockett.
This brings up the Rotary Connection. You know you're in danger. Oh, shit, he about to start talking about Charles Stepney. Go ahead.
From Michael Lockett.
Hey, Michael.
The subject line is the Michaud Criterion Collection.
Okay.
Len and Vince. I rest my case as it has been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that top five, I don't know what top five he's talking about, was the best top five ever. I love listening to everyone who chimed in, and of course, the defense by Len of such music industry changers as Jagged Edge and Casey and JoJo. This week in my Michaud time travels, I listened to Sister Act 1 and 2.
Okay.
I've seen these two flicks so much that it was nice to hear your takes as well as those of your guest. I agree that Lily Tomlin or another actor of that time could have stepped in and the films would not have changed much. They are just fun movies that really allowed a multifaceted talent like Whoopi or Lily to shine.
Mm-hmm.
I also listened to and rewatched Sounder.
Mm.
This is just a beautiful Oscar-worthy film. The look, the feel, the acting, everything worked. I know you two have bantied about a few films for a Michaud Criterion Collection, and I don't remember if this one was in there. I think it should be. It is an incomparable black film. All the best, Michael Lockett. We have talked about a Criterion Collection before. Mm-hmm. The only reason this wasn't mentioned previously by me is because I hadn't seen it.
Sure.
So I couldn't, I didn't want to vouch for it, but I certainly would put this in.
And in full disclosure, like I said last week, I think in a lot of ways it gets eclipsed by the learning tree in my head.
Yeah.
So, you know, last week was great for me to re-examine it on its own terms. And certainly if I've not said it's worthy of a prestige presentation, I certainly think that now.
Most certainly.
Yes.
Most certainly.
But thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Michael. And thank you for all of your thoughts, especially about Sister Act 1 and 2. That was a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Both were fun movies. All right. And we have one more email.
Okay.
This, I have to read it.
Okay.
Is a missive from the missionary, one Maurice Poplar.
Hey, what's up, Mo?
Hey, Len and Vince.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it would be in poor taste to pile on about Jagged Edge and KC and JoJo. So, instead, a black movie question. Thank you, Maurice.
Thank you.
I feel like there has been a satisfying run of subtly angry black films lately. Not punch you in the face, do the right thing angry, but with the Black Klansman, even Spike Lee has joined the mood. They Clone Tyrone, Sorry to Bother You, Get Out, Us, Till, The Blackening, Honk for Jesus, even American Fiction. They have this vein of quiet, subtle fury that was never in the 80s Eddie Murphy movies, not in the Wayans Brothers films, definitely not in Tyler Perry films. I guess I call it anger because filmmakers are showing something that feels black and defiant. It's not stuff you see in films by white folks. Thoughts? Is this almost a genre? Maurice Poplar, a.k.a.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think it's anger. But
it's a lot of frustration though.
Frustration, it is some pent up frustration being dealt with, being dispelled or dispelled.
You know what I think? As I'm thinking this in real time, because I'm thinking about moments in history where you get this kind of anger / frustration in black art. And I'm thinking about like after World War II, after the quote unquote civil rights movement, like I'm thinking about the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what both of those moments have in common with this, if again, this isn't developed at all. I'm making this up
in real time.
Like, I do think you have these moments in American history where black people are optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is the moment that things are going to get better. And then they don't. And then you get this wonderful art that comes out of this frustration, this disappointment, everything. And I do think the frustration that we're talking about in a lot of those films that Maurice just named, I'm wondering if these are post-Barack Obama art, examples of art.
Hmm.
Like, I think there was a moment where once again, we thought, okay, this is it right here. Mm-hmm. 2008 through, you know, these two terms, this is it. And now we're right back with some, you know, arguably even in a worse place than before. And you get the wonderful frustration of Us and They Clone Tyrone and American Fiction, where it seems like these are three very different texts.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think there is this kind of frustration and this anger.
That's the through line.
Is a through line in all three of them. Again, this is not a developed thought at all.
I mean, I think that makes sense because there certainly was an optimism to the 8 years that Barack Obama was the president, which was followed by the huge letdown,
right,
of what followed.
Right.
Which,
you know, in full disclosure, as a black person, felt and feels real personal.
Yeah. Yeah. And it makes you, it does make you mad.
Mm-hmm.
It does cause, you know, there's, you know, maybe anger is the right word because I have found myself more than a couple of times dousing the flame a little bit because I'm like,
right.
I need to stay in the house today.
Right. You know what I mean? Right. Like you feel like, let me take a beat.
Yeah.
Like, let me take a beat.
Yeah. So I think that this art that's being put out, these films, because we're just talking about the films.
Although I think you could certainly talk about other.
I'm sure it shows up in other ways as well.
Like I would argue Lovecraft Country.
Well,
and reflects this as well.
Well, I think in
something like Lovecraft Country.
Something about Lovecraft Country to a degree, the reinterpretation of Watchmen.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Exactly.
So I think it's something that is that you know, speaking specifically, so would extend it from movies to television, or you know, with also in these last 10 years, the democratization of making such fare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that you can do it on your phone. Like you can make a movie here on your phone and get these stories out so much easily, so much more cheap, and they can find an audience.
Mm-hmm.
That feeling, that frustration, can be dispelled that much easier. And I think that there are artists out there such as Jordan Peele are showing that there are ways to get this story out there without it having to be just a, you know, the George Floyd story.
Right.
There are other ways to get these feelings out there so that everybody can appreciate it and feel it and take it in.
Yeah.
Because when it comes coded, or not coded, but when it is done in such a way that it's the George Floyd story, or even like something like Till, or something that is kind of like baked in history, I think there is certainly a segment of the population that will tell themselves, oh, that's not for me because that's their story. And I don't want to, you know, they turn turn away. That's not for me. But when it's coded in like, you know, more genre fare, such as like Get Out or Us or They Clone Tyrone, then it's kind of, or Sorry to Bother You, then it kind of like
Spider-Man across the
Spider-Verse,
where there's a fair amount of black anger in there if you really, like if you're really looking for it.
Yeah. So now it's there and it's right. you can't miss it.
Right.
You know, so.
When Miles says, nah, I think I'm going to do my own thing. Like I remember a little jolt.
Yeah.
Like he feeling a little jolt. Like, I don't know if we're just talking about being part of the Spider Society right now. I feel like there's some other things going on right here in this bit of dialogue.
Yeah, and while the scuttlebutt that we have heard a little bit about Lovecraft Country is that there may have been some behind the scenes stuff that is the reason why that show only got one season. I'm pretty sure that there were some, you know, people in the C suites of HBO. They were pretty happy.
They weren't sad to see it go. They weren't
sad to see that draw go, man.
Right. Damon Lindelof and his band of black writers said, oh, we just want one season of Watchmen. And they were like, you know what? Let's go with
you
that.
You know what?
One season sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah, one and done.
Okay. You know, I like the symmetry of that.
Oh, yeah, sure. You told a complete story. Let's put a bow on it and do something else.
Now secession.
Right. Say, But thank you, Michael. Once again.
That was Maurice. That was Maurice.
Thank you, Maurice. Once again, very thought-provoking.
Very much. All right. That's cool. Hey there, missionaries. You know that Vince and I, we love you.
We do.
And we're glad that you come to the show every week. It would be a huge help if you could do us a favor and head over to Apple Podcasts and review the show. I know, it doesn't seem like it's a lot, but trust me, it helps other people
find our little mission.
Absolutely.
So head over to Apple Podcasts, type in the Me Show mission, and rate and review.
Thank you.
All right, let's keep this movie going, ladies and gentlemen. It is now time for our next regular feature, which I like to call the Top Five.
Top Five. Who's your Top Five?
Five, ladies and gentlemen, where I give Vincent a list, he gives us his scintillating commentary on it. And Vincent, I had a little struggle with today's top five because I wanted to keep it in theme.
Sure.
And my first thought of a theme was thinking about Running Scared, the movie that we're going to be reviewing, and thinking about Gregory Hines.
Yeah.
Who was gone too soon.
Oh my goodness, yes.
And when I started thinking about Gregory Hines and his movie careers particularly, I was like, okay, Hines, going too soon. He didn't do a lot of movies. I'm thinking in my head, he did maybe 5, 6, 7 movies.
Like this, Tap. He was in Ragtime. What's the one with Mikhail Baryshnikov?
White Nights.
Rage in Harlem,
and The Cotton Club.
Wait, I said Ragtime. I meant The Cotton Club. Was he in Ragtime?
No.
Right, so I meant The Cotton Club.
Okay. But, okay.
So done?
Those are pretty much the movies that I'm thinking too. So I'm thinking in my head, I'll do like actors that kind of like went too soon and left a small body of work. Gregory Hines did 40 films. I couldn't believe it. Now, he's not the star in all of them, but he has roles in 40 films.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I'm like, well, that doesn't mean that doesn't fit the criteria.
Yeah, but now I wish your top five was five films Gregory Hines was in that Vince doesn't know about.
You know what? I'll tell you. You want to know?
Is that going to be the top five?
No, it's not the top five.
All right, we ain't got time to do it.
Okay.
All right, let's keep it lean.
All right.
All right, come on. You can tell me later.
Yes.
Or I can use, I believe it's pronounced Google.
Google.
I believe it's pronounced Google. I will look at Google and see what the films were. Please continue.
So I had to come up with another top five.
Okay.
So I looked at Running Scared specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Gregory Hines.
Mm-hmm.
Noted tap dancer.
Yes, he is.
Actor, but still big time. I think first thing most people think of is a dancer.
Sure.
Billy Crystal is his running mate in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Crystal, comedian.
Yes.
And Billy Crystal, not everyone's first choice for anything that calls for action.
No.
So I was like, okay, that's a weird buddy cop team up for a movie.
It really is, which we'll talk about.
Right. Mm-hmm. So then I started thinking, okay, well, there have to be other crazy buddy cop movie combinations out there, right?
Okay.
Tons of them.
Fair.
Right? But I decided not to do a top five of any of them.
Oh, good, because I thought we would talk about the Tom Hanks dog movie.
No. So what I did was I went back to the 80s.
Okay.
And I said, if someone could be daring enough to put Gregory Hines and Billy Crystal together in a film, if I gave Vincent two other stars of the 80s who seemingly you would never pair together.
Mm-hmm.
Could you come up with a buddy cop concept for these two stars?
Okay.
So I've got five combinations for you, Vincent.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Here we go.
Put on your casting cap.
It's casting cap is on. It's
Vincent the movie producer.
All right.
Buddy cop for number five.
Okay. Who are the buddies?
80s huge R&B star, Diana Ross.
Diana Ross, okay.
And Christopher Walken.
Christopher Walken. And they are buddy cops, so like he can't be her handler.
No, so they can't be the bodyguard.
Right, they actually have to be partners. Okay. So the two of them are detectives that deal with high-end
hair
theft.
Oh.
High-end theft. So she knows fashion and jewelry.
Okay.
He knows like art, paintings.
Okay.
Paintings, you know, sculpture.
Okay.
There has been a break-in at MoMA.
Okay.
In New York.
Okay.
And the thing about it is that that would require a very highly specialized fence.
Mm.
The two of them are the agents on the case. It takes them from New York to Milan to another country. I was just trying to, I couldn't think off the top of my head, like let's say Tokyo.
Okay. Okay. Is there sexual tension?
There is not.
Really? Interesting.
No sexual tension.
None at all.
And in fact, Diana Ross has the love interest.
Oh, so she already has.
Walken does.
Is her love interest the fence or yes. Is it the criminal?
Perhaps both. But he's ethnic. Brown speaks a bunch of different languages, and as part of the tension, you don't know where he fits into all this.
Is it a 1980s Raul Julia?
That could work. Yeah. All right, so there you go.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You got a title? If you don't, it's fine.
I don't.
That's fine. That's fine. Don't. We'll put it in the title machine.
Be dazzled.
But
two words.
Oh, so be
mm-hmm.
dazzled.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. I thought for some reason, I thought you were going to try and get like Christopher Walken to be like dancing in this because he's a bit of a dance man.
Yeah.
But no.
I'm not. Because Diana Ross is not going to be dancing. We don't want Diana Ross. So. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
You know, you made your point.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's number five.
All right.
Number four.
Number four.
It's the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the world of action.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the biggest star of the world of action in the 80s
mm-hmm.
is Sylvester Stallone.
Okay. And who is he partnered
but
with?
You know who he has never partnered with in his life?
Who?
Anyone from hip hop.
Okay.
So in this action film from the 80s,
mm-hmm.
Sylvester Stallone teams up with Salt and Pepa.
Sylvester Stallone and Salt and Pepper. Oh, it's a drug thing uptown. It's some type of.
Why gotta be a drug thing?
I'm gonna tell you why. Because Sylvester Stallone is an old school narcotics detective, but we're gonna lean on him being Italian. He came up through the 70s working organized crime mm-hmm. in the mafia, but now it's the 80s and things are shifting. And he can't really operate in Brooklyn and
right,
Harlem.
Right.
So they have these new detectives these new jack cops right out of the academy who have connections and both of them deal with sort of being quote unquote traitors to their tribe, which is what Sylvester Stallone has dealt with his whole career as an Italian-American detective working the mafia. And now the two of them are dealing with that as well.
Oh, I love it, Vincent.
There you go.
Look, that is on point.
There you go.
That is on point.
Mm-hmm.
Yo.
All right.
Oh, man. I'll be down for that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can't tell me there's no sexual tension between Sylvester Stallone and Pepper.
There's sexual tension between Sylvester Stallone and Pepper.
All right, all right. There's sexual tension between Pepper and everybody.
I was about to say.
Ooh.
Push it good.
Yeah.
Push it real good.
Mm. Oh, we're on air. Number three.
Number three.
Now, this is in the 80s.
80s.
Someone you would never think would do action, but would do comedy.
Okay.
And it was a growing star in the 80s.
Okay.
And that from television,
mm-hmm.
one Michael J. Fox.
Oh, okay. Yeah. This is going to be easy because I think he can work with everybody.
Well, Then you tell me, how does Michael J. Fox work with that other 80s superstar of television?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. T.
Michael J. Fox and Mr. T, they are undercover.
How is Mr. T going undercover?
Because they're working. Because they're working at a circus. They're doing a circus. The crime people are using the circus to move things from city to city. They go undercover. Mr. T is a strong man. And Michael J. Fox is, what are we going to make Michael J. Fox?
The bearded lady?
A magician.
Okay, he's a magician.
Mr. T is a strong man. Michael J. Fox is a magician. They are working undercover in a circus that they think is a front for smuggling things throughout the country.
See, I think I love the circus.
Mm-hmm.
But I think,
and it's the 80s, so like the laws with animals aren't as strict as they are now.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be elephants and monkeys and shit and all kinds of things. And they can do all kinds of things and, you know.
But I think you're missing an opportunity.
How you gonna ask me what my idea is and then tell me?
I love your idea. But I can't be in the room too.
What's the idea?
I love the idea of the circus.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. T as a strong man is a little too easy. Because he's Mr. T. He's not undercover. You gotta make Mr. T a clown.
No.
Why not?
First of all, Mr. T has zero range. We've talked about
that. That's the joke.
No. It's already high concept. It's already a lot of moving pieces. Just the two of them in the circus, and it's animals, and it's all these things. Having Mr. T go against type within this is too much.
He's not going against type, but because of his mohawk, right?
The other thing is, I'm not selling this as a comedy. Like, it's light, but it's not a comedy.
This is a tense thriller in a circus with Michael J. Fox and Mr. T?
It tonally, I think it's closer to this. Like, it's a little breezy. It's a little breezy.
So what's the title of this? Blood in the Ring?
I don't have a title.
Blood Under the Circus Stop.
Blood would not be in the title, though.
Blood would not be in the title.
Blood would not be in the title. There's a solid PG.
PG. So it's a thriller, but it's serious,
mm-hmm.
But it's PG.
It's solid PG, knocking on PG-13.
I think you're missing it. Mr. T is not a clown. Because then he doesn't have to go against type, but he's just dressed as a clown. It gives a reason for the haircut.
Yeah.
And then you can dye the haircut.
Yeah.
And he's got the face and he's got the...
Also, that pulls away from Michael J. Fox. It's too much. Mr. T is too much. Like, Mr. T, DC Cab shows you got to keep Mr. T in his lane.
Was he too much in Rocky?
Well, that's perfect. He's actually perfect in Rocky III. Like the Mr. T thing is, he got so popular that he couldn't be a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
You couple him with Michael J. Fox. Mm-hmm. Michael J. Fox can't be a bad. So, you know, you say it's a buddy, like a buddy guy. Like the twist I'm about to make with one of these is that they're going to be villains or at least rogues.
Okay.
But the two of these guys, these two guys, I think work as undercover cops because America loves them.
No, I get them as undercover cops.
Which means you gotta play it straight within their lanes.
Okay.
And once you start moving Mr. T outside, like that's why DC Cab in Mr. T's canon is the weakest Mr. T entry like that, and arguably the cartoon where he's like a gymnastics coach.
Yeah, it's really...
like you got to keep Mr. T in his pocket for him to work. So I lift shit, but I'm also a cop.
Yeah, but he could be a clown lifting.
See, right?
Funny
see
if
you,
it's a clown.
See, when, Well, that's for your listening. I'm not gonna have him as a clown. He have one of them shirts, one of them strongman shirts, and he's lifting things.
Elephants,
right?
Okay, all right.
You know, like maybe there's a comedic moment with a monkey or an elephant or something that likes him. Like I said, it's 1980, whatever. So there are no animal protection laws at all. Like they can drug some tigers and have them out around them. Or not drug some tigers and they're chasing them around like the lion did Minnie Riperton. Have you ever seen the outtakes of that photo shoot for Minnie Riperton's?
No.
Yeah. Where you know the album cover where it's her with the lion?
Yeah.
That lion rears up.
Oh, really?
So there are photos of Minnie Riperton like, you know, scared because the lion is rearing up. And it's like, man, the 70s was wild. So
did you ever see that? Speaking of lions, you ever see that movie that was filmed? I can't remember the name of it. This guy does a movie about living with the lions and tigers. His family grew up with the lions.
Yes.
But you see him playing with them. And they're like, they're beating the hell out of him.
Yes, because they're lions.
Because they're lions. They're not doing anything wrong. They're just being lions.
Yes.
They're like, they're walking around with pieces of his flesh on their nails.
Hey.
Crazy. All right. Number two.
Number two.
All right.
All right.
Now, world of the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Pop star.
Mm-hmm.
Also movie star.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Teamed with probably the appropriate action star to team him with.
Okay.
So we have Prince. And Kurt Russell.
Oh, the Gentleman Thieves.
Kurt
Russell is a gentleman thief. Think of Kurt Russell, trying to think of a good, well, first of all, it's a little bit against type with Kurt Russell.
Yeah, okay, if you're putting him as a gentleman thief, yes.
But they're very much, I think Kurt Russell.
No, I love Kurt Russell.
Right?
No.
But I think so much, you know, you think about Big Trouble in Little China, you think about Escape from New York, they really play up him as this kind of tough guy. But I do think you have to play it up. Like, I think Kurt Russell, when you look at Kurt Russell's whole career, A, is a decent actor.
Very good.
Which leads to B, part of the reason he gets played up as this kind of tough guy in these movies is because that's the role.
Mm-hmm.
But in a different role,
he's totally different.
You give him a haircut, put a tuxedo on him. I think they're gentlemen thieves along the lines of, well, Kurt Russell more than Prince. But even Prince, I think you could work it where it's like almost that Cary Grant gentleman thief, where like I'm a gentleman thief, but I can throw the hands if I need to. And then they steal some stuff. Make it international.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Filmed on location in the south of France.
Oh, so you're kind of like almost remaking Under the Cherry Moon.
I have to say that's where Prince's look comes from in my mind.
That is a good look.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could actually see it in black and white.
Both of them at some point have one of them black cat suits and they breaking into safes and you know
the people, they'll show up for Prince in a cat suit.
Right, sliding in between the laser security, and you know one of them is good at cracking safes.
Is Prince going to have his butt cheeks out of his cat suit?
He is not.
And have his heels, got to have his 3-inch heels. He got to have his heels. If you're not going to, if his butt cheeks is covered, he's got to have his heels.
He might have heels. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. With some chains.
But yeah, Gentlemen Thieves.
Gentlemen Thieves. Prince and Kurt Russell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. All right. I see Aaron Fry in the chat saying this might be like a Dirty Rotten Scoundrels type of situation. I don't know about Dirty Rotten Scoundrels because that's more con men.
Mm-hmm.
But I see what he's pulling at there.
I'm actually like, think about it. Like, imagine if Hudson Hawk was good.
I have never seen all of Hudson Hawk.
Well, imagine it if it was good.
Wow. Okay.
All right.
All right.
All right.
Now, my number one.
Number one.
Combination.
Combination.
Which may also be equally easy for you.
Okay.
Two actors. Mm-hmm. Well, two stars of the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
One who I don't believe ever did an action film.
Okay.
And one who longed to do any type of film.
Okay.
And both of whom are, sad to say, no longer with.
Okay.
Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson.
And Robin Williams.
Oh, yeah. You got to do high fantasy.
Well, just to make sense of Michael Jackson.
Right, you got
to
do high fan. And Robin Williams is going to match his energy.
See, that's the thing. It's not so much Robin Williams matching Michael's energy. It's will Michael be able to match Robin's energy?
Yeah. It's basically Dungeons and Dragons.
So it'd be like, like a sword and sorcery type of situation.
Right. And they're both roguish, once again, perhaps.
Roguish.
Roguish thieves and...
Nothing roguish about Michael Jackson.
I think there's a bit of mischief in Michael Jackson. Like, I think about him as a scarecrow. There's some mischief in there.
Okay, that's 70s Michael Jackson.
Okay.
You're talking 80s Michael Jackson.
I think about him in the Remember the Time video.
Oh, are you kidding me?
There's mischief there. There's mischief. There's humor. There's energy. I see he and Robin Williams running from some guards.
I don't see. I try to picture Michael Jackson running. Don't see me.
He runs in a couple of his videos.
I don't know about that one.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
It's got to be a fantasy thing, though. Like
fantasy, both, I can see.
Like both of them got to have on some tunics.
I can see definitely some Dungeons and Dragons
tunics
type of thing.
And some type of pouch.
See, I don't think.
Like they go into places and pay for things with coins.
I can see that.
Right.
I can see that. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right. That's interesting.
Like, I feel like Michael Jackson would really get into, like, sitting at a table eating with, like, a mutton leg in his hand in a big goblet, pretending there's something in there. Like, I mean, he's been playing dress up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has to be really dressed
up. Yeah. And then, Hook is not great, but you could tell Robin Williams was having a ball.
Hook is not, and I like Hook.
But it's not great. Yeah.
It's not great, but it's memorable.
Yeah. It actually kind of makes me sad now that I don't have a sword and sorcery light fantasy film with Robin Williams and Michael Jackson. I think that could be fun.
But okay.
Yeah. I think that could be fun.
I think it actually would be more fun if it was Robin Williams and Prince. I think Prince would get into it more. I think Prince has shown that he can get a line over.
Would I rather see Prince? No, I'm going to go with Michael.
Here's
the problem with Prince. Prince makes it sexier than I think it needs to be.
Well, the man can't help but be what he is.
Like, I don't think it needs to be sexy at all.
Well, it doesn't need to be, but it doesn't hurt.
That's a different energy.
See, but my problem.
And Robin Williams doesn't need to be near anything sexy.
Okay. But my problem with Michael Jackson is that if this was The Wiz Michael Jackson, I'd go with you. But this is the 80s Michael Jackson. The 80s Michael Jackson.
I think
there's a period
between Thriller and Bad that you can still work with Mike.
I don't.
Yeah, like there's a, like, whatever that moment is where he bleaches his skin.
Get to Bad. Okay, I see you on that. But I think Thriller immediately.
Thriller video, Michael Jackson, you can work with.
Yeah, but you know what? I think that Michael Jackson is still very affected. And I, where the Wiz Michael Jackson is not.
I'm not giving you that. There's a moment in the Thriller video. It's my favorite moment in the video where Ola Ray gets up and she's like, I'm scared, and Michael's like, you know, I'm watching, and she gets up and leaves,
And he's still there.
There's a split second where he cuts her a look that it's like, oh, well, see, that's it right there. Like, that's the foreshadowing right there that he's the monster. And then when he comes out and he's teasing her and he's, yeah, I 100% disagree with you. If they film it the week after they film the Thriller video, so you got to catch him at the right moment.
This window of time, week after Thriller.
Look, whatever happened between Thriller and the cover of Bad, he loses it. Like the video for Bad where he tells Wesley Snipes, you ain't bad, you ain't nothing. That's too late.
Well, I think he's on his way there.
No.
At the end of Thriller.
You got to catch him right at the end of Thriller.
You know what?
I mean, it's like 3 years between the albums.
No. You know what? I'll give you. I'll give you immediately after Off the Wall.
No.
No, because immediately after...
You said 80s. I'm trying to play it straight.
But it is 80s.
Okay,
is 80s. Because you got to remember, because even though he has an afro in the cover...
As he's making Thriller.
Right.
All right.
Right.
I'll take that.
Because I'm thinking of Michael Jackson in the... what's the video that's mostly him dancing?
Rock With You.
That Michael Jackson, I think, has vestiges of the Wiz Michael Jackson because he just permed his hair.
Sure.
And I think you can.
All right, I'll take that.
Okay.
I'll take that.
All right. That was fun.
Yes. There you go.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was my top five.
All right.
I hope you were entertained.
Yes.
And now it is time for the Game of Kings.
Game of Kings, a man who made buddy films with himself.
It's 6 degrees of Derville, Mark.
That's the key. Like, you'd be surprised what a person can do with just a sense of touch and a sense of sound.
All right. 6 degrees of Derville Martin, ladies and gentlemen, where I give Vincent two actors and he has six films or less to connect them with Derville Martin. Keeping it in theme, Vincent.
What's the theme?
I'm trying to remember. looking at these names, I'm like, where were they? Did he get these names from? I think these are comedic actors of the 80s.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I believe that's the connection.
All right.
Such as Billy Crystal.
Sure.
Who stars in Running Scared.
Yes.
So in six films or less,
mm-hmm.
connect Derville Martin to Rodney Dangerfield.
Rodney Dangerfield.
Mm-hmm.
That thing is, it's funny because you mentioned a couple of weeks ago that he was uncredited in Moving. I only know Rodney Dangerfield in two movies. There's a movie where he goes back to college, which is like called Back to School.
No, exactly.
It's called Back to School, but I have no idea who was in that. But you know, the film that I really know him from... you know, Derville Martin is in Dolomite with Rudy Ray Moore. Rudy Ray Moore is, of course, in Penitentiary 2 with Ernie Hudson, who is in Ghostbusters with Bill Murray, who is in Caddyshack, of course, with Rodney Dangerfield.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. How many movies did he make in the 80s?
In the 80s alone, he made... three movies, not counting Moving, where he's uncredited.
Yeah.
He did Caddyshack and Back to School, as you mentioned. But in between, in the middle, in 83, He did Easy Money.
I remember Easy Money.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't bad.
Yeah,
what else would he have been well, in that did, I would remember?
He did the animated film in 1991 that was kind of named after him, Rover Dangerfield.
I remember that.
Which was good.
Yeah.
And then I believe he is a soccer coach.
Right, like Ladybug. Is it Ladybugs?
Exactly.
When you said it, I remembered Ladybugs.
And then I think his last.
I don't know how to connect any of these.
Then he is in Meet Wally Sparks in 1997.
Yeah.
And then he shows up in a few Adam Sandler films. Because he's.
Does he?
He's in Little Nicky.
Never saw Little Nicky.
This is not Adam Sandler film. This is a Rodney Dangerfield. My Five Wives.
I've never even heard of that.
Neither have I.
Who else is in Back to School? Anybody in Back to School that I would know?
The name you probably know that I know right off the hand is Sam Kinison. But the other names in there are Sally Kellerman, Burt Young, Ned Beatty.
Ned Beatty is in that. I forgot about Ned Beatty in that. Okay.
A young Robert Downey Jr. And one of your favorite girls from the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Adrienne Barbeau.
Adrienne Barbeau! Used to walk past bras. I don't need those. Adrienne Barbeau. Here's your blouse, Ms. Barbeau. Do you have this in a size smaller?
Next we have.
Next.
In six films or less.
80s comedian.
Connect Derville Martin too. This one's going to be hard.
Okay.
Carol Kane.
It's actually not going to be as hard as you think.
Oh, because I know what movie.
Right. Well, and we're talking about Billy Crystal tonight. But she's also in Jumpin' Jack Flash, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we'll stay with Billy Crystal. Damn! Carl Hughes is not in Grease 2.
Who?
Carl Hughes.
I don't believe so. I'll double check.
Nah, he's not, because that's the other dude.
Yeah, I think that's
Maxwell something.
Yeah.
But we're not talking about, we're talking about Carol Kane.
Oh, not Carol Kane.
And so the way to get Carol King is Derville Martin is in. Well, I always like to use this one. There's always a nice one. So Derville Martin is in The Final Come Down with Billy Dee Williams. Billy Dee Williams is in The Empire Strikes Back with Carrie Fisher.
Mm-hmm.
Carrie Fisher is in When Harry Met Sally with Billy Crystal.
Who is in
The Princess Bride
with
Carole King.
Very good, Vincent. Very good. It's just that easy, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Like I said, I only think about her in Jumpin' Jack Flash and The Princess Bride, where she plays Billy Crystal's character's wife.
Mm-hmm.
What else is she in?
Oh,
she's in a billion things, but I always just think about her in television, on Taxi.
On Taxi, right.
Yeah.
So just looking at movies that I think you would know.
Mm-hmm.
She was in Jumpin' Jack Flash, as you mentioned, Princess Bride, Scrooged.
She sure was in Scrooged.
She's the Ghost of Christmas Present.
She sure was in Scrooged.
She's in Joe versus the Volcano.
I've never seen Joe versus the Volcano.
My Blue Heaven, which is the Steve Martin movie.
Oh, right, because that's the funny version of Goodfellas.
Mm-hmm.
Or the funny sequel to Goodfellas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She is, of course, Grandmama in Adam's Family Values.
Oh, I forgot about that. Okay.
And she is in, I think I'm looking at more recent movies. She's done a lot of voice work.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, more recently, yeah, a lot of his voice work or movies that I don't think do.
Sure. But when she was in, when she's in a movie, you know her.
Oh yeah, yeah. I am a big Carole Kane fan.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Very good, Vincent.
Oh yeah.
Well done.
It's kind of a sweet spot though. Like I know my 80s comedians in these movies. So
you've done very well.
Yeah. All right.
All right, ladies and gentlemen.
All right.
It's now time for us to get into see, y'all can't be putting, they're just people be putting in the movies in the chat. So now you can't look at the chat.
Princess Bride, Scrooge, best part of Cannonball Run. I don't even know what that means, the best part of Cannonball Run.
Probably that's talking about Adrian Barbeau.
Oh.
When's the last time you saw Cannonball Run?
I probably have not watched Cannonball Run from beginning to end in 10 years.
Yeah, it doesn't hold up.
Yeah, it does. You're just a hater.
I'm not a hater.
You are 100% a hater.
It does not hold up.
There is nothing on earth that would make me believe you.
It does not hold up.
And I don't believe you. I don't believe you.
But you haven't seen it.
I know, but I know you, and you have no joy in your heart for these things.
I do have joy.
You don't.
I do.
You don't.
I love the greatest of all of these crazy chase movies.
You about to say a mad
it's
world.
A mad
right,
world.
The old timey version of this. That is the most on brand thing of you ever. I don't like this one. I like the old timey version of it.
First of all, it's not old timey.
What year is a mad world from 1950 what?
It's not 1950 something. It's like 1960. 1961?
One,
two, or three.
Right, like Martin Luther King saw it in the theater. And said
he said he liked it.
Right. Any movie that like Malcolm X could have saw in the theater is early 60s.
Okay. Fact of the matter is Cannonball Run does not hold up.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Blues Brothers holds up.
Mm-hmm.
Cannonball Run does.
Mm-hmm. Come on.
You haven't seen it in forever.
And I don't believe you as far as it not holding up.
It doesn't.
I do not value your opinion on trash cinema of the early 80s. There it is. Any opinion that you have on trash cinema of the early 80s, I do not take you at your word.
It's time for us to get into our review of Running Scared.
We'll be right back with our movie review after we step to these messages.
Let me tell you something. When you've been cops this long, you are not fit for anything else.
We're looking for some new career challenges.
Yeah, something with a future. Show me another career they let you shoot people.
Give us your money.
You're mugging us?
I don't believe this.
You better believe it or you're dead. Oh, come on, let us keep the driver's licenses and the snapshots.
And our badges. I can't believe that you missed all six shots.
What are you talking about? I hit the windshield six times in a row.
I'm the one who made him swerve.
Oh, you made him swerve?
Yes, sir.
You always aim low anyway.
Oh, good. Nagging me now. Nagging is good. You owe me $10 and I never said anything.
You want it now?
Yeah, I want it now.
Did I come at a bad time?
Follow that car.
Oh, now you're gonna criticize my driving?
Well, just that you get to do all the dangerous stuff and I get to parallel park.
I love this job.
Two, streetwise Chicago cops have to shake off some rust after returning from a Key West vacation to pursue a drug dealer who nearly killed them in the past. Running Scared from 1986, starring Gregory Hines, Billy Crystal, Joe Pantoliano, Dan Hedaya, and one Jimmy Smits. Directed by Peter Hames, is Vincent's selection for this stop on the Michaud Mission. Vincent, what say you of Running Scared?
How do I want to start talking about Running Scared?
You want to cry sweet freedom?
Cry sweet freedom, yes, as the theme song goes. This is a film that I think it's safe to say, without speaking to you formally, you and I both enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm really kind of more interested in is what makes this film work. And certainly a film that we think works that had a bit of a muted reception
mm-hmm.
when it came out. Like I think this is a film that as the years have gone on, people have begun to appreciate
warm
more.
Too. Yeah.
So I'm always sort of fascinated. And I think a lot of that is rooted in something in a quick exchange we had at the end of the episode last week, where we were talking about this film in its place in history. And I mistakenly thought that this was a film that came out before 48 Hours.
Mm-hmm.
And you corrected me and said, no, it actually came out a few years after 48 Hours. And not only is that true, but as this film comes out in 1986 and Beverly Hills Cop comes out in 1984,
mm-hmm.
this is actually a post Beverly Hills Cop film. And Beverly Hills Cop and you know, to a certain extent, something like Lethal Weapon, which I think is maybe 85, I guess.
It's right in that.
Right. Like do Lethal Weapon very quickly?
Mm-hmm.
Is this post Lethal Weapon? Regardless, this is a film that feels out of sync.
Right.
With the type of.
Oh, Lethal Weapon is actually 87.
87. Okay. Regardless, this is a film that feels out of sync with the type of action films that are coming out at this moment, because there isn't a lot of flash.
Yes.
Peter Hames is a director that, you know, I think he's a very professional director.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he knows what he's doing. When you look at his filmography, nothing really jumps out at you, although he does direct my beloved Capricorn One. There's nothing really in this script, perhaps, that jumps out at you. And I'll circle back to that in a moment. As we kind of discussed with the top five, neither one of these actors, Billy Crystal nor Gregory Hines, are actors that it seems like someone would say, let's hang this on them.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like you would an Eddie Murphy, like you would a Sylvester Stallone. This story, plot-wise, is barely a plot, really. You know, Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines play these two detectives who are in their mid-30s,
mm-hmm.
seem like they've known each other for 50 years,
mm-hmm.
which in a lot of ways is a remnant from the fact that this script was originally meant for older actors.
Yes.
Jimmy Smits is a career criminal who is smuggling in some drugs. They sort of stumble onto this plot very early in the film. And Joe Pantalone is a low-level crook that they lean on, trying to figure out what's going on with him. And there's been an exchange of this money. Come to find out, a cop turns up dead.
Yeah.
So then you're like, okay, well, maybe this is the serious moment. And I look for a film that's almost 2 hours long. It's like comes in like an hour 40, hour 45. It's really almost the half hour plot
mm-hmm.
point where the plot kicks in. You're like, oh, okay. Well, they have to solve this murder.
Yeah, right.
But then they arrest Jimmy Smits.
Yeah. The plot is.
And they solve the murder.
Right.
And then Jimmy Smits gets arrested. But there's some hullabaloo with some young detectives and they mess up an undercover operation. So then their police captain forces them to go on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And they go to Key West. And there's a 10-minute sequence of them in Key West.
It's a music video. It's a music video.
And they're going, you know, I do have to say again, Peter Himes, I don't think does any great direction, but there's, you know, this wonderful little montage with these quick, almost MTV like cuts where they show the two men on scooters.
Yes, that's cool.
With a bunch of different women. So it, you know, shows them enjoying themselves in Key West. You know what? Billy Crystal says to Gregory Hines, again, a remnant of this older script, why don't we retire and buy a bar down here in Key West?
Mm-hmm.
Gregory Hines says, sure, let's do that. It's like, okay. So maybe this is the plot.
Right, right.
But no, then they come back.
But you missed the part where Billy Crystal surprisingly gets an inheritance of $40,000.
It's $40,000.
Which in 1986
is a lot of money.
It's a whole lot of money.
In 2025, $40,000 seems like a huge amount of money. It seems like this was going to be a huge part of the plot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they mention it, and the implication is that he uses that to help with the bar, but that doesn't really go anywhere either. Then they come back, and you think Joe Padalone, and then then Jimmy Smith gets out of jail.
Right.
And now they have to figure out Jimmy Smith's smuggling some money in. I mean, smuggling in the drugs. But even that is very, it's almost like the film isn't as concerned with the plot as anyone watching the film.
Exactly.
Because the real strength of this movie from the moment it comes on is Billy Crystal.
Mm-hmm.
And Gregory Hines,
mm-hmm,
vibing and talking and enjoying each other's company.
Yes.
And as the audience, we are so happy to watch them vibe off of each other very quickly. You don't even care about the plot and Jimmy Smith's and Billy Crystal has an ex-wife who he may or may not still have feelings for, mm-hmm, but you know, part of the reason that that the ex-wife scene stick out to me, and Gregory Hines, who is very sexualized, we should talk about that as a black actor in the 80s who is very sexualized, and he has this sort of subplot with Tracy Reed.
Yes. Who he seems to be kidnapping.
He kidnaps. Well, what I said, you know, is at points throughout the early part of the film, they stomp all over Joe Padalone's civil rights and pressure him into things. Like I said, these are the most lovable corrupt cops I've ever seen in my life. But even the one or two scenes with their respective love interests, the entire time they're with them, you're thinking, can we get these women out of here and get these two back together? Because they're not even concerned. It's a shootout. Well, we're just riffing back and forth. They're in Key West and the beautiful women, they're riffing back and forth. There's a car chase. They're riffing back and forth. At the end where it's like, well, I guess we got to wrap the movie up and show that it's serious. So Billy Crystal's ex-wife gets kidnapped.
Yeah.
So now it's serious.
Mm-hmm.
But they're riffing in the middle. It's Uzis and it's the 80s and it's this, that, and the other. But these two are enjoying each other's company so much. And they are riffing. And there's this wonderful patter that I was just thinking about. You know, I think, you know, as we've mentioned, of course, Gregory Hines is a dancer,
mm-hmm,
at heart. And I think that is really the foundation of what made Gregory Hines such a wonderful performer across the board. Like he takes this immaculate timing that he has.
Yes.
And he applies it to every aspect of his art.
Mm-hmm.
So he has this wonderful comics timing. He has this wonderful physicality to how he relates to Billy Crystal. And for me, the genius of this is that Billy Crystal, yes, is a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like Billy Crystal pulls from this kind of Jewish borscht belt tradition where it's kind of deadpan. It's very conversational, but it has this very understated rhythm. Like you think about, you know, Jerry Seinfeld is probably the most famous of people from this tradition in 2024. But this very kind of conversational, very kind of patter, so that this film has this wonderful rhythm
mm-hmm.
between these two performers that you might disagree with me with this, because I feel like you and I talked about this a few years ago and you're not necessarily a, hopefully I'm not putting words in your mouth, and you are a fan of these movies, but it reminded me of the old Bob Hope, Bing Crosby road movies.
Okay.
Where, you know, they made, I think, seven of these movies, mm-hmm. Road to Morocco, Road to This. And they are barely movies.
Mm-hmm.
It really is just Bing Crosby and Bob Hope hanging out, bouncing off of each other. You get the bare minimum of a plot.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of ladies involved at one point because, you know, you got to have a love interest. But you are there to see the two of them.
Yeah.
And this is a film that you are here for Gregory Hines and Billy Crystal. And certainly in 1986, when this comes out, I think the sensibilities of the audience, we're looking for an Eddie Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking for this sort of bigger performance.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of out of sorts from that. But this is also what makes this film, I think, age very well.
Yeah, it definitely does age well because of that more toned down, realistic story and or action beats,
mm-hmm.
or lack of a better word, that this movie employs throughout the film. Like you said, the plot. I mean, Jimmy Smith gets arrested like four times in the movie. Like it's four episodes of the best TV detective show you've ever seen.
Right.
And I couldn't help but think that because, like, movies, when movies come on, we've talked about this sometimes, when they have like their title sequence, you can win Oscar awards for title sequences because mm-hmm. movies you employ, they make it is an event. It's a staging of how you do that. Running Scared just says Running Scared. Starring Gregory Hines. I mean, it literally comes on like a TV mm-hmm. show. TV show.
Let's get to it.
You know what I mean? I'm like, yo, what is this? Like, I'm like, this is literally a TV show, the movie, right? So, but I'm not going to knock that. That's fine. It is all about Gregory Hines and Billy Crystal, their chemistry with one another. You would not put either, they would not be anybody's first choices for an action film. Mm-hmm. Like you said, the script and the producers were originally thinking of older actors,
mm-hmm.
older white actors for this film. That was going to be, I think the script had it set in New York originally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then they were talked into because Peter Himes, who came on as a producer as mm-hmm. well as a director, was like, "No, let's put it in Chicago and let's make it younger." And smartly realized that you could have younger, but they could still be just as world weary as you wanted them to be,
mm-hmm.
especially if they're cops. Because figuring if you're in your 30s and you can already have been a cop for like 15, 16 years, as they mentioned in this movie.
Yeah, as they say in here. Yeah.
So you've been a cop since your 20s. And if you're a detective living a life like they have, like basically living within the, like living with the crooks, like basically like plain clothes detectives, you can get tired of that life real quick, especially like Gregory Hines makes the joke when one of you has $40,000 burning a hole in your pocket. You're like, I really don't need to have any bullets running over my head. You know what I mean? So, and to that degree, I think the $40,000 inheritance does become a bit of a plot point, because then they all of a sudden, because there's a joke about now they're putting on their bulletproof vests. Mm-hmm. They're like, whoa, hold up. Hold up. Like I need to like stay around for a minute. So that becomes like a thing. But it is all about their chemistry. The plot makes no sense. It's stupid. It goes back and forth. They yada yada themselves out of everything, including being trapped in a trash compactor. I'm like, are you serious? Like, they just literally yada yada themselves out of a trash compactor. Like, this is the movie. That is the most, like, superhero, like, the most Sylvester Stallone action movie bit of this movie. Everything else is very grounded. Well, until the end when they realize, oh, this is an action movie. We need a big set piece. You know, right. We've rented this right. big building. Right. What are y'all going to do with it? Right. Well, we could just tell some jokes. Mm-mm, no, that's not going to work. We've rented the whole building. Right. Y'all got to be in this whole building.
But then Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines ignore everything and talk to each other half of the scene.
But, and here's the thing, they're still talking to each other. One of them, they're 80 feet apart.
One of them's
literally dangling in the air. The other one is on the ground and they're still like, you missed him. I got him. Like, I'm like, are you serious? Is this what happening? What is it? I'm like, oh my God. But they realize, look, this is what got us to the table. Yeah. This is what's going to put it over the top.
Right.
It's still them joking, because there's moments when they are talking to one another. Jimmy Smits, who is the antagonist in this film, but at no point does he really feel like the antagonist. You always keep waiting for there to be like another Mr. Big on top of him.
Right.
Like, it's almost like Jimmy Smits can't believe, like, wait a minute. Didn't y'all just arrest me? Why am I back in?
Well, I wanted them to lampshade it, because I kind of got off of him. Like, he was frustrated that no one would pay attention to him. I'm shooting at you. I locked you. I tied you up. It's some Uzis.
I kidnapped your wife.
I kidnapped your woman. Would you please pay attention to me? While you two are over there more enamored with each other.
See me.
Right, see me.
See me.
Hey. It's like doing prank calls and they steal his car and do prank.
He gets to jump on them at least three times in this movie. They will not die.
And are not concerned. That's my thing. Like, they're just, oh, well, here we are. What do you mean, here we are? What did you do? I mean, what I did? You owe me $10. Do you want the $10 now? Jimmy Smith is over there like, I have goons and 90 Uzis pointed at you.
In many ways, Gregory Hines and Billy Crystal are the Roadrunner, and Jimmy Smith is the coyote.
Right.
They don't know he's there. They just, oh, bird feed.
Right.
They don't care. They do not care. And that is because this movie is four episodes of the Roadrunner cartoon.
Yeah.
And it's stitched together.
It's
just that simple. And it is like, because with every Roadrunner cartoon always takes place in like the highways out, like in the out west, right? But like every fourth or fifth one, they're on just like, you know, like in the it's just plain. It's just plain. Just straight lanes, or there's a highway and it's not like dirt roads. And that's this one. This is basically Roadrunner cartoons stitched together. Yet there's this one episode where they go to Key West. And then that guy.
Right.
And I mean, it's so silly, but you're right. And the thing is, this movie is probably 15 minutes too long.
Probably.
But you don't care because you're just sitting there watching these two knuckleheads. And you're right. You don't even care about the women. You don't, because as much as the movie kind of makes you want to care, like, you know, Billy Crystal maybe is still in love with his wife. And like Gregory Hines kind of has this thing going on with Tracy Reed where he's kind of like stealing her from her dude or husband. I don't even know what.
Right.
Yeah, that's happening. But you're right. There's also the sequence in the middle where they're on the scooters. And they went for like about 12 different women.
Yes.
While they're in Key West.
Yes.
So how much do they really get? I mean, they really don't care.
We know what the real relationship is.
We know who they really love.
We know who they really love.
Because you can see, because who did Gregory Hines give a key to his apartment? It was Billy Crystal.
Exactly.
Who was coming over with donuts in the morning?
It was Billy Crystal.
Right. I mean, so.
Because you really wanted those French things, but I hate when I mispronounce the word and they look at you funny. You mean croissants? It's fantastic.
But it's just a dumb, fun movie. And you're right. It does stick out in the increasingly over-the-top action films mm-hmm. of that time.
And star-driven.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And that probably is why it didn't fare as well. But where's better?
Mm-hmm.
Because I contend that as much as everybody still loves Beverly Hills Cop
mm-hmm.
1 and 2, I still like 48 Hours more.
Yes.
And that's because it's a little bit more grounded
mm-hmm.
as a movie.
And it's more character-driven as opposed to a star vehicle.
Just Eddie Murphy riffing.
Yeah.
You know, for all the Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger movies mm-hmm. and all of those type of things, you know, it's still the Rocky, which is the character.
Right.
Which gets you over the top. Nobody's really returning to Rambo.
Right.
And Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I mean, First Blood is a better film than Rambo.
First Blood is a totally different movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, like, which ones do you really return to?
Right.
You know? So, I mean, this movie, it does age well. It ages great. I would contend this may be Billy Crystal's best performance in a movie. Maybe my favorite one. I like When Harry Met Sally. I like not Three Amigos. What's the urban?
Yeah, just not Rawhide.
Cowboy thing, whatever that movie. City Slickers.
Slickers.
I like City Slickers. But this may be my favorite.
You know, I'm an outlier, and I acknowledge that, but I'm a Mr. Saturday Night guy.
And see, if I've never seen Mr. Saturday Night.
And I do think When Harry Met Sally, I think he's legitimately great in When Harry Met Sally.
I'm not saying he's not good in any of them.
Yeah.
I'm just saying this may be my favorite.
Sure, okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
But it just gets, and Gregory Hines, I mean, oh my God, if you didn't miss Gregory Hines just from seeing him in everything mm-hmm. and watching him dance and seeing him in Taps and everything like that, watching this movie and just realizing, wow, this dude, he could do everything.
Yeah.
He could do everything.
There's actually a great interview that they did with Billy Crystal on the 35th anniversary of this film. And he says sometimes he just watches this movie to reconnect with his friend Gregory.
I mean,
as you can tell,
they really
liked each other.
They really liked each other.
Yeah.
They were very selective because there was talk, as modest of a hit as there was talk of doing a sequel,
mm-hmm.
but they were particular, like, we're only going to do it if it makes sense.
Right.
And the scripts that were getting written didn't make sense. And then, you know.
Which, you know, really breaks my heart because I really wish they had done like three or four of these.
This isn't one of those movies that you return to just like Devil in a Blue Dress.
Mm-hmm.
You return to it and you're like, why wasn't there more?
Yeah.
There should have been more.
Yeah.
So many missed opportunities. It's criminal that there's not more.
Well, here's a question for you. Because what I really think about with this, frankly, is Midnight Run. Like, to me, Midnight Run is the real parallel to this.
That is it. That's one of my favorite movies.
And I think
Robert De Niro, Charles Grodin.
Would you argue that Midnight Run has a higher profile than this?
Yes.
So then the question is, why? Is it just Robert De Niro's star power? Because God knows Charles Grodin never really got nobody to go to the movies like that.
No, no, no. It is Robert De Niro's star power. I also think that Midnight Run is a better movie. But I think also...
Yes, it is.
But I think what it also is that because... Like, Midnight Run is a comedy that has action in it.
Mm-hmm.
Running Scared is an action comedy, which means that there has to be a certain percentage of action in it,
right,
which means that you have to tangentially give a damn about the villain a little bit.
Right.
Where Midnight Run is the plot of the story is the two of them getting along. Because
right,
the plot is getting one person to be. It's about that team.
And I looked it up because Midnight Run is 88. So we are dead in the midst of these kind of bombastic 80s films. And I feel like Midnight Run is another film that, even though it was more popular than this, has sort of gained prestige as time has gone on.
Midnight Run is it probably is no longer considered a cult classic. It is like considered like a underappreciated classic.
Mm-hmm.
One of Robert De Niro's better roles, better performances.
Yeah. Arguably the first, is this the first moment where we realize he could be funny?
Like as a straight up comedy.
Or just, well, right, work. Like, was he funny before 88?
Well, he did do, if you want to think that he's kind of ironically funny in King of Comedy.
Yeah, he's not funny in King of Comedy. Like, King of Comedy is a little dark.
It's dark, but it's a dark comedy to a degree.
He's playing funny, but he's not funny.
No, I hear
what I'm saying.
But I'm saying,
like, Midnight Run, he's funny.
No. Okay, but I'm saying that would probably be the closest up to that point.
Right.
You're right.
Right. Like, I think it's a straight line from Midnight Run to his 90s stuff.
Right. That probably is, you're probably right. This is probably the most unabashedly comedic.
Yeah.
Robert De Niro. And you see, like, oh my God.
Right. He's got timing.
He's got timing. He's got everything.
Everything,
you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, this you would have loved, like, the makers of Midnight Run to get their hands on Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines.
Yeah.
Even if it's not a straight sequel, just get your hands on them.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It'd have been a wrap.
Yeah. Like you think about Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson in Money Train, because they just work so well together in White Men Can't Jump.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's you know, I hate to say these types of things, but they just don't make movies like this anymore.
They don't, but I don't want to miss your one point, because it is a very good point about how sexual Gregory Hines is in this movie.
Yes, he is.
Because this was definitely important to him. It was one of the reasons why he would seek out roles that maybe were written mostly for white performers, because they would be more sexual, and he wanted to present his full self, you know,
and not exploitive, not, you know, this isn't like a blaxploitation era sexuality.
Exactly.
Like, he's a grown man.
He's a grown man doing grown things.
Yeah.
And unapologetic about it.
Is there another black actor that is sexualized throughout the 80s like this? Because I think Eddie Murphy is surprisingly chaste in those Beverly Hills Cops movies.
Oh, yeah. Big time. Like, does he even have a love interest in any of them?
Yeah.
In the two that count.
Right. You know, they play Danny Glover as old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's married, but, you know, they play him as old. So they're, you know, he's damn near asexual in the Lethal Weapon movies. We've talked about Carl Weathers and Action Jackson and the way they neuter him.
I'm actually now trying to think of before Boomerang. Eddie Murphy is sexy in Boomerang.
Right.
Is he sexy in He's not sexy in Coming to America. And even, he's not sexy in Coming to America.
Right, and Coming to America isn't really that film. But no, he's not really sexualized in Coming to
America.
He's
not really sexualized in a lot of films.
He is not.
Yeah.
He is not at all. Like, it really is Boomerang. They have this throwaway bit in 48 Hours.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of, talking about throwaway, like, they kind of put a woman next to him at the end of Trading Places. But as
far, oh, that's right.
But I as far all about as, that. As I am an Eddie Murphy character,
well, he is kind of,
and I have a love interest, it really is Boomerang.
Or the Golden Child, wasn't he kind of like
sort of, kind of.
But it wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't. It definitely wasn't what this is.
It's 100%
not what Gregory Hines.
It is not this at all.
And the thing with Gregory Hines, the other thing about this, and it speaks to the character, it's not forced.
And it feels
of him. It's not a put on at all.
Look,
you know what I mean?
We mentioned Tracy Reed. We've not seen Tracy Reed since
Car Wash. She shows up in Car Wash.
Is that before? And she's in A Piece of the Action.
That's after.
Right. And in both of these, she is very much an object.
Yes.
Like, I like the fact that she's a little older in this. Like, she actually feels like a person in this.
Yeah, even though the character's not giving much.
Which,
but yeah,
makes her sexier. Like, I think she's so sexy in
this. It does.
You know, Gregory Hines is 36. She's probably 30. Like, her character is probably 30.
Mm-hmm.
But she's a woman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful. So would you recommend that people see Running Scared?
I absolutely would. Like I 100% would. And so much so, I damn near want to recommend it to you to watch again later.
Well.
Because it's so breezy.
Mm-hmm.
It moves so much. And as you said, you could argue it was 15 minutes long, too long. But it damn near has a freeze frame at the end.
I know.
With the cigar. I was sad when it went off.
I know. You know what? This was one of those movies.
I was like, oh.
I was watching the credits like, aren't they coming back?
Man, are they going to come back? So they're not going to retire.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, 100%. This was a real joy.
It's funny, you saying you were recommended to me to watch again. I actually watched this movie over the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there's a pandemic.
Sure, and, sure.
I was like, I haven't seen this movie in a minute. Let me watch this. So it was almost like when we had to watch it tonight, I was like, I kind of have just seen the movie. I could watch this again.
I
happily sat down and watched it again, man. Like, I don't even think like I even really took notes, man. I was like, I need some wings and watch this movie.
Again, not really plot heavy.
Well, no. No. Oh, Jimmy Smith is back again.
This time I'm going to get you.
So that is...
Wait, did you recommend it?
I said yes, I would recommend it.
Okay, all right.
Good. Well, I didn't. I started talking about that. Yes, I would absolutely recommend Running Scared, ladies and gentlemen. See Running Scared. And then watch it again and introduce it to a friend.
Yeah.
This is a movie that ages very well.
It does.
And, to your point, would be an excellent double feature with Midnight Run.
Oh, yeah. That's an evening right there.
Now, that's a movie I might go home and watch again.
Yeah.
I could watch Midnight Run. I love Midnight
Run. Yeah.
Oh, my God. All right. So that is our review of Running Scared, ladies and gentlemen. Before we tell you what we're going to be reviewing next week and the very special guest that will be joining us, I invite you to please, if you are watching us on YouTube and you have not subscribed, what are you waiting for? You obviously like us. Subscribe. Hit that like. Like the episode. Because the more people that we get, the more subscribers we get, the more YouTube says, hey, this show must be saying something. Let's push this out to all the people that like movies and black movies and two black guys talking about movies and Yunk Junk and Dylan. Let's push it to all of those people that like all of those things.
That's right.
But we got to get our subscriber numbers up, and that means each and every one of you. So if you're already subscribed, thank you very much. If you haven't, please take a moment, take a split second, subscribe to the Me Show Mission. And once you've done that, go tell a friend. Go to tell two friends.
Proselytize.
To subscribe to the Me Show Mission, which is available every Tuesday. We stream right here from Yunk Junk, Philadelphia's premier video podcast palace in the world. It's the world's video podcast palace. Yunk Junk has officially asked me to, Len, we have updated our status. We are the world's greatest video podcast palace. Hey, they had the stats. I saw it. There you go.
There you go.
Yunk Junk. But they don't have a website. So if you want to get on to find, book yourself in the studio, you got to hit up Dylan. Dylan at yunkjunk.com. That's D-Y-L-A-N at yunkjunk.com. Hit him up. All right.
All right.
The Me Show Mission is available on all the social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Me Show Mission. You can email us at MeShowMission at gmail.com. Let us know what's on your mind. MiCheaxMission at gmail.com. The Me Show Mission is also a proud member of The Podglomerate, ThePodglomerate.com. They make podcasts work, such as ours, which will be teaming with the Be Real Black Cinema Club tomorrow night.
Tomorrow.
Here in Philadelphia, as we will be at Bryn Mawr Film Institute screening Pariah.
Yes, sir.
2011. Oh, it promises to be a great time. I've seen the pretzels. They will be delicious. I can't have any, but they will be delicious. All right. Next week here on the Me Show Mission, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to be welcoming back, as we continue our march to our 400th episode, we'll be welcoming back award-winning journalist and educator of journalism here in Philadelphia, Denise James.
Yes.
Will be in the building.
In the building.
To sit with us to review from 2024, Ava DuVernay's Origin.
Yes.
Cannot wait.
Very much looking.
This will be a great conversation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Next week here live from Yunk Junk on the Me Show Mission. Until then, he's Vincent. I'm Len. And in parting, we say,
see you when it's time to meet again.
The Me Show Mission is produced by Len Webb and Vincent Williams, with co-production by Mo Poplar. Check out Mo's family travel podcast, Bon Amigos, at ashyfeet.com. Original music is provided by Alexa Gold. Visit Alexa Gold Music at Bandcamp for more of her melodies. The Me Show Mission is edited by Len Webb and produced for YouTube at Yunk Junk. Visit Dylan at yunkjunk.com for more information.